Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Alexis Coe. She's a historian, and she's written a new biography of George Washington entitled You Never Forget Your First. It's probably one of the most memorable biography titles I've ever come across. Alexis, there have been many, many biographies written about our nation's first president. Some won the Pulitzer Prize. So what makes your Washington biography stand out?
I love presidential biographies, and I usually read a few in conversation, but when I would read Washington biographies, there was something very strange going on. At the end, I didn't really emerge with a better understanding of him, which is odd, after 4,000 or 5,000 pages worth of books. It's almost like everyone took an oath. We will write a Washington biography, but we will do it in the exact same manner. We will not deviate. We start with, he's too marvelled to be real. I'm going to break him out. We end on a celebratory note. He emancipated his slaves. And I found it didn't really check out. I also felt like the way that they were written, which is very much great man history, was defensive, and it was somewhat alienating. And the same things were repeated, for hundreds of years, the same stories without checking out. What I wanted to do was look into those primary sources, ask myself in a totally new way, what were his concerns? What was he considering at each moment? And I also wanted to write it for a different kind of person. I wanted people, we do think of presidential history as being for dads. And I don't think that's true. I think that there are a lot of readers who are hungry for this kind of book, for a different kind of presidential biography that's not 1,000 pages, that has a different title, a different cover, a different presentation, a bit punchier, is a bunch of micro-histories mushed into one. And I think it's time for that. I think we need, especially now, we need to understand the presidency.
With all of the literature that's been written about George Washington, are there still untapped primary sources that people haven't even considered?
Oh, absolutely. It's wonderful and it's awful to have so many primary sources and to have them have gone through what we call documentary editing, which means that Library of Congress, the George Washington Papers, Mount Vernon, they've all gone together for decades, and they have transcribed his letters and letters about him and his documents, and they've annotated to a certain extent. What happened, though, is that, when there is just an abundance of material, people tend to pick and choose what they can spend their time on. And because this has been dominated by a certain kind of historian, predominantly male, hundreds of men to just, I'm the third woman and the first historian who's a woman to do this in the last 100 years. They sort of fixated on the same things and repeated the same stories. So basically, I tried to start from scratch, and I went into the archives, and just the most repeated stories, something just, the anecdote appeared everywhere. That's the one I went after first. And what I found was either it didn't check out, or the stuff around it was far more illuminating.
You mentioned in the book how authors like Joseph Ellis, Ron Chernow, they all talk about Washington's manly thighs. What was your observation about that? Because I thought that was brilliant.
That was the first thing that struck me as odd. And I don't just mean that. I mean, it was funny. I'll admit it was darkly funny to me. But it also struck me as inappropriate. If I was talking, if they talked about a woman that way, everyone would have gone ballistic. And I think that we need to apply those rules to everyone. The other thing that was weird about it is, these books are very long. They're, 1,000 pages. And they're focusing on things like his thighs. And not just his thighs. They say, in these ways that, again, strike me as inappropriate, almost like romance novels, that he it wasn't just his size, but it's what he did with them, the way he gripped his saddle, the way he moved. what they're trying to just say is he was graceful and he was charismatic, and they're also defending something that I don't think needs defending. I don't think anyone wonders, was George Washington, powerful? Was he a strong physical specimen? I think we all agree on that, if we agree on anything. And then, behind that, it's like, well, there's something hinky here. Why are they then going on and on about how he's so very manly, even though he didn't have children? That's not a connection I make, and that's not a connection they made in early America. The fact that Washington did not have heirs, power-hungry children, son-in-laws, they there were none of them, and that to early America was a really good thing, because this is a time of monarchies. We've just fought a very long war. It's been very hard. It's been on our soil. There's been all kinds of deprivation. The fact that he doesn't have heirs is comforting to us. And also, he didn't really care. He wrote about it maybe twice. And really, the kicker here for me is that Washington, I do not think of him as childless. He was lousy with children. He was raising children from his late 20s, I'm talking about young children, until the day he died. And he was really invested in them. Martha came to the marriage with a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. Then they raised her grandchildren, nephews, nieces, friends, cousins. He thought about their schooling. He was contacting doctors if one was sick. He mourned when they died. He was frustrated. You know, he's lecturing his grandson on losing his umbrella. That is helicopter parenting. And that is why I think it's so strange that, okay, he had smallpox. He couldn't have biological children. End of story.
I'm chatting with Alexis Coe about her new George Washington biography, You Never Forget Your First. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Alexis, as you look through what Washington wrote, was he concerned about his legacy?
He was. You know, what's interesting is he spent a lot of time protecting his archives. He is a micromanager. And it's, you know, lucky for us, really, because it tells us what he cared about. He left lots of directions about how to transport his papers after the war, after the presidency. And then he went back and he essentially, used whiteout on them. And what he chose to fashion and what he left behind was really illuminating. For example, it was a good thing during his time period that he deprived Indians of their way of life, that he made sure that they, that a genocide happened in order to ensure that settlers had land. He also thought a lot about his legacy in terms of slavery. But, you know, it wasn't just legacy building. You had people that he met during the war, like Lafayette, you know, made famous from Hamilton, the musical. He's a lot of fun, but he was also a really rich Frenchman who had really progressive ideals, and he and Washington had a bit of a bromance. And Lafayette spent decades writing to Washington saying, if you emancipate your slaves, he owned hundreds of people, you will change this country. And Washington would say things like, you know, this says so much about how sweet you are, how caring you are, you know, let's definitely discuss. But he didn't. And he didn't because his life depended on hundreds of enslaved people. He had a plantation, a forced labor camp. He was a businessman, most definitely. We can say he was a gentleman farmer. That doesn't tell us a lot about. He was one of the largest whiskey distributors in the country. He, so tobacco when he was younger. So this is essential to him. But what he does is he publishes his will, which is, you know, suggests that this was important. And in it, he the way he's described is he emancipates his enslaved community. Not quite. He emancipates one man outright, Billy Lee, who biographers usually present as, the encapsulation of slavery for Washington. What about the hundreds of people he didn't emancipate? And not only that, I mean, he put Martha in a really, for her, a terrible position. He left it up to her, and they knew this because the will was published. So she spends the next year of her life, you know, worrying her house is going to be burned down, fearing for her life. We know this because she told this to Abigail Adams. She told it to Supreme Court Justice Bushrod Washington, Washington's nephew. And she emancipates his slaves a year later. This is not because she had a change of heart. She had power to emancipate people that they had purchased during their marriage, and she did not. She did not have power to emancipate the slaves that came from her first marriage. And what happened was, during the many years of their marriage, her slaves and his slaves had married and started families. When she dies, all that changes. They're separated. 20 families never see each other again. And 20 families, it's a lot of people. It's hundreds of people who are married, their parents, their grandparents, they never see each other again. And that is heartbreaking. But that's not where I end the book. You know, I don't want to end on this celebratory note. I don't want to end on something where, you know, I'm not trying to cancel George Washington. I'm just trying to understand him. And that also means understanding what he means to us And I think during the Civil War, it's really significant that both the Confederate and the Union soldiers, the slaveholding and the free, they all came to Mount Vernon to pay their respects and to carve their initials into his vault where he's buried along with his family, because he felt, you know, to them, he belonged to everyone, and they were right.
Quick, before I let you go, I got to ask you about the miniseries that's airing on History Channel this month, Washington. It's Doris Kearns Goodwin's project, but you were a consulting producer. What was your involvement?
I was a producer. I was in the writer's room for 6 weeks, and I also appear in it, very pregnant with a table in front of me. And it was a wonderful experience. It's so different than the book. And I was really focused on the history and getting as many historians in there as possible. And what I love about a good documentary, whenever I'm in one, for instance, the Kennedys on CNN, I think the major contribution is when historians have different opinions and you see such a range of men and women who come from different backgrounds and have different approaches and understandings to, you know, of the man. And I think we achieved that. And of course, it was a great honor and a privilege to get to know Doris Kearns Goodwin and to become a friend.
The book is You Never Forget Your First, a biography of George Washington. The historian who wrote it is Alexis Coe. You can pick up the book wherever and check out the Washington miniseries, three-part miniseries this month on History Channel. Alexis, just a fine presidential biography you've put together here, and thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.